Hello and welcome back to the Greatest Rivalry, a podcast brought to you by Wisden. I'm Nick Eshrogani.
And I'm Ardif Nawaz. And so far this series, we've taken you on a journey through time, looking at the historical cricket rivalry between India and Pakistan. And really, nothing in the world compares to it. We've had some wonderful guests on with us so far. Everyone from the likes of Farooq Engineer, Asif Iqbal, Zaheer Abbas, all the way through to Waqar Yunus and Ashish Nehra. So many more legends in between.
Yep, and we're here in association with a great new product called BatSense, which is available at kpsmartsports.com. It's a lightweight gadget that fits onto the top of your bat handle and connects wirelessly to your smartphone. And it basically tells you about your technique and you can see what you're doing right and what you need to improve on. It's not just useful for individual use either, but also a brilliant way for coaches to get more of an insight into how their players are batting. It's got a 6-hour battery life and weighs just 25 grams, and it's available right now for a discounted price of just £97 plus postage. Just head to kpsmartsports.com to order yours now.
Yes, it's definitely worth checking out. Just like the previous episodes on this podcast series, if you haven't heard our story from the 1950s up until the 2000s, then definitely check that out. You can catch up right now on the Wisden Weekly podcast feed via any major platform. And whilst you're there, you might as well subscribe and rate us too. Now, last week, Azhar Mahmood and Ashish Nehra took our journey right up until the end of the 2011 World Cup. India's greatest moment in a generation. We looked at the bilateral series played between the sides in the 2000s, the last of which was in 2007. But after that, apart from a three-match T20 series in 2012, no bilateral cricket has taken place between India and Pakistan until the present day. And it doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon.
No, and I distinctly remember that 2012-2013 series. I think the T20 series, the two-match series, took place around Christmas time, I believe. I'm sure I remember watching it either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, the first T20 match. And the reason I remember it so well is because Bhuvaneshwar Kumar made his debut for India in that series. And, you know, I know a lot of India fans were frustrated at the sort of injury situation with Praveen Kumar before that, because he came into the side and he was seen as this guy who could swing the ball miles and miles, and you know it was such a threat with that new ball, especially in white ball cricket, when those first few overs are very crucial. You don't get much swing after that, and he was so good at just nipping out one or two early on. And he had these injury problems which were very frustrating for India fans during that period. And then Bhuvaneshwar Kumar came on the scene and he did exactly the same. I remember he took 3 for 9 in that first T20 match. India did lose that particular match, but I think they made it 130 odd batting first, and they had Pakistan 12 for 3, I think it was.
A ball in! Fantastic ball! Oh, got him! Cut behind! Is the finger going to be raised? Yes! The umpire has raised the finger. Ahmed Shahzad is staying where he is. He's not happy. Delivery. Now that is sensational. That is absolutely sensational from Kumar.
Those three wickets from Bhuvaneshwar Kumar before Pakistan eventually went on to win that particular match. But, you know, he made his debut in that T20 series. And Mohammad Shami making his ODI debut for India in the third one-dayer, which was to follow early on in January. And do you remember, Atif, Nasir Jamshed? There's a name from from the not-so-recent past. Brilliant ODI series he had. 106 and 101 not out in the first ODI as well. Fantastic batting from him up the top of the order.
Yeah, he was awarded the man of the series for that particular series, so the one-day series. And because they played three matches in the one-day series, which Pakistan won 2-1, and then they tied the T20 series 1-1. Yeah, it's why I always kind of find quite fascinating is how many of those players are still kind of in and around the setup 8 years later for Pakistan. Because, you know, when you look at players like Shoaib Malik, obviously Misbah Haq is now is currently the coach, but, you know, people like Harish Sahil, Wahab Riaz, Junaid Khan, Mohammad Irfan, you know, some of these players are still, and Mohammad Hafeez, of course, who had a really good series, in that particular tour. Like, they're still around. A lot of these players have had a lot of longevity for Pakistan, and they were all there. Like, they if we get another tour to Pakistan, you'd think there would be a completely new team by the time India and Pakistan tour each other again. But
might be our grandkids.
Well, I mean, it's extraordinary when you think about it. Yeah, it is Christmas, and you know, a lot of people sort of observe Christmas in India and in Pakistan. But so you know, it's an unusual time of year to play as well. Like, some of these games that took place, the T20 series, it started in Bangalore. That must be freezing over Christmas.
Well, South India is not too bad, actually. South India is pretty good at Christmas. I've spent sort of Christmas period there around that time. It's not freezing, but when you go up to places like Delhi and into the Punjab as well, not ideal cricket conditions around that time of the year. And they did, of course, tour all over India during that series, during those five matches as well. But, you know, I suppose it was the only gap they could find in the calendar. And it was quite a sort of last-minute thing, I remember. It wasn't in the calendar for a very long time, this series. And, it was seen as a gesture of friendship, like all of these series seem to be from the sort of 80s and 90s onwards, whenever there's been tensions between the countries, all of a sudden, you know, a cricket series tends to sort out a lot of those differences, at least temporarily, and the countries come together and enjoy some cricket together as well. So it was great to see, but it's just such a shame that, it wasn't a full tour, so there was no test matches involved, and B, you know, we've not seen anything like that since. It's just been playing in tournaments, ICC tournaments and Asia Cups. So, India... getting beaten at home, but the fact that they actually played against each other and Pakistan were willing to come and tour India at that time, I think that's the main thing here, and that's the bigger issue, and that's why a lot of people will fondly remember that series.
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned that debut for Bhuvneshwar Kumar, who would go on to become a superstar for India. He wasn't the only kind of major debut in that series. And Muhammad Irfan, who played a lot of cricket, the very, very, very tall fast bowler from Pakistan, he made his debut in that series as well. But another player who's still a fixture and like a very big star in India, Mohammad Shami, made his debut in that series as well in the third one-day international. What a time to unearth some talent for both teams.
Yeah, and I suppose around that era was when India started to discover that they have got all this fast bowling talent in India, and not only just the talent, because you know they've had talent previously, but somehow the coaching setup was able to groom that talent properly, let them do the things they do well naturally, and just hone one or two things. I mean, Mohammad Shami still bowls pretty quick nowadays, hasn't really changed too much since that time, and he's part of, I would say, in this current day, the best fast bowling lineup in Test cricket. Would you agree with that? I mean, you know, you've got the likes of Ishant Sharma now bowling better than he's ever bowled in his life. I mean, you see his figures for the last couple of years, absolutely incredible. Jasprit Bumrah is a part of that. Mohammad Shami, of course. And then people like Umesh Yadav, who can't even get into the team. Bhuvneshwar Kumar, who's kind of on the fringes in and out of that Test side as well. I think it was really the start of something for India, specifically finding those two.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we'll go on to discuss, there were a few things that happened in India that prompted that discovery of so much fast bowling talent, that change of the style of wickets prepared. And, you know, I remember it was Michael Holding who famously said, "I can't believe India now develops better fast bowlers than the West Indies because of the way they prepare their pitches." And, you know, there was this shift towards making spin friendly pitches in the West Indies, whereas because of the advent of the IPL and, you know, this incredible talent and this fast paced cricket, you know, the pitches changed. They were of a much higher quality, much more there for fast bowlers, and more nurturing of these incredible fast bowlers as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the IPL. We touched on it in the previous episode with Azhar Mahmood and Ashish Nehra, both of whom did play in the IPL. Azhar actually started in the IPL in 2012, around this time, just before this India-Pakistan series. So, somebody who'd been out of the Pakistan side for so long was still, you know, actively playing and was chosen to go and play in the best T20 league in the world. He went to play on for the Kings 11 Punjab for a couple of years initially. And the IPL, I suppose, around 2012, around that time, fourth season was just starting to, you know, get established. People were starting to have their affiliations with a certain team or a certain franchise because of the core group of players associated with those franchises. And, you know, it really was sort of getting this almost football-like feeling inside the stadiums and just around the whole tournament itself as well. And I think it started to become a little bit more professional around this time. I'm not saying it wasn't, you know, completely professional in the early days, but, you know, there was that kind of culture of let's all go for a good time. All these players from around the world are getting paid millions of pounds. There were parties every night, nights before matches, you know, teams would be out partying. And a lot of the times they would be contracted to attend these parties. They were officially associated these parties with the brand of the IPL, and for those star players to be seen at those parties was a crucial thing. So all that kind of started to ease down a bit, and the team started becoming more professional. The franchises realised that, look, this is a long-term thing we've got here. We can't just, you know, waste it away partying and having players not fully fit, because the product at the end of the day is based around the quality of cricket. And I think the quality of cricket really improved at that time. And as a result, as you say, Arthur, India's cricket improved in a big way.
Absolutely. You know, you can really see that transition point where it went from, you know, I know some of the players who've enjoyed the parties more than the others, but I mean, I think there was definitely this change in mindset, this change in mentality of, like, you know, this is a league where we're unearthing real talent for the future of India. I remember when the PSL was launched, there was, you know, this emphasis on let's find the next big star, whereas with the IPL, initially at least, there was definitely an element of let's introduce cricket to a wider audience. Let's try and, you know, find a way to monetize this in a more efficient way. But at this point, you started to see that impact of the IPL, of all these foreign players, of the quality of cricket on the quality of Indian cricket broadly, on the Indian cricket team. You saw, you know, players like MS Dhoni demonstrating that exceptionally cool head, that absolute, like, dead calm approach under pressure that was rare, you know, in India-Pakistan games. You often saw players, you know, you could visually kind of point out moments of high pressure. You could see it on their faces. Whereas, I mean, if you watch clips of MS Dhoni in India-Pakistan fixtures, you'll never see that. And I really attribute a lot of that to the IPL.
Having said that, though, Atif, I mean, I was going to ask you, do you think Pakistani cricket has suffered because their players, I know initially in the first season they had a few players involved in the IPL, and then relations completely soured between the countries in terms of cricket especially, and they just weren't welcome. You know, it was all political, to be honest. No Pakistanis were allowed into the country. The only reason Azhar Mahmood was allowed to play in 2012 was because he lives in London, he's got a British passport, and, you know, he's not a Pakistani citizen, so he was welcomed to go and play in the IPL. Do you think Pakistani cricket has suffered because they were the number one T20 side in the world for a good few years in the mid-2010s, weren't they?
They were. It's a ranking they've kind of flirted with a lot over the last decade. I certainly think their cricket did suffer. It was a multitude of reasons, and I think that was one of them. I think having played in the IPL would definitely have been a huge benefit for the Pakistani team. They could have inherited some of that mentality, some of that modern approach, some of these global tactics. They've kind of missed out on that. But, and you can tell it was really important because of their keenness to develop the PSL, which at the time was a huge risk. It was a huge roll of the dice. But they realized that there's immense benefits in having a world-class T20 league and having your young talent exposed to some of the world's best players. And India had been doing this at that point for, you know, almost 10 years. So it was really, really important for Pakistan to come to the table. And they recognized the importance of the league. And, you know, there's absolutely no question about the standard and quality of the IPL. It's right up there with anything in the world.
Yeah, certainly is, indeed. And, you know, this sort of era we're talking about, India, of course, the one-day world champions, 50-over world champions in 2011, you know, absolutely fabulous moment for the country. And they kicked on from that, really, under the captaincy of MS Dhoni, who'd previously won the first inaugural World T20 in South Africa in 2007, when India didn't care about T20 cricket, and the IPL was, of course, born off the back of that. He then went and captained India to that World Cup win, and in 2013 went on to win the Champions Trophy, full set of ICC trophies for MS Dhoni, the only man in the history of the game to achieve that feat. And that 2013 Champions Trophy, remembered fondly by lots of India fans, took place in England, of course. And as always at these ICC tournaments, on the way to that final, India and Pakistan met in the group. It's funny how the ICC always seem to make that happen, isn't it? Must make them a few quid around the world with that fixture. And I suppose it's one that everybody wants to see. But not a really a fond memory for you, Atif, and Pakistan fans, that group fixture between Pakistan and India at Edgbaston in 2013.
Yeah, not much, and it wasn't the kind of best game, sort of visually for fans as well, because there was a lot of rain around. There were a few delays. Pakistan got knocked over for 165 and just short of the 40 overs, which the game had been shortened to, and then India was set this sort of Duckworth Lewis target of 102, which they got to very, very comfortably.
Everybody inside now, and Kohli's good, charging across for the single. He completed. India win. A rain curtailed match. It was down to 22 overs, 17 balls left, and you've got to say 8 wickets. This is as comprehensive a win as any you can imagine. 102 for 2. India win by 8 wickets on the Duckworth Lewis system. But don't let it take away from the fact that this was as comprehensive as anything.
You know, it's one of the first kind of major mismatches between the two in ICC events, because, you know, yeah, you do have sort of one-sided games, but this is one of the first times that there appeared to be a bit of a gulf in between the two teams. And, you know, and Pakistan still had many stars in their team at this point. You know, they still had the likes of Misbah, you know, Shoaib Malik was still around, Saeed Ajmal was still there. So it's not a completely weak Pakistan team, but the holes left by the likes of Waqar Yunus and Waseem Akram and you know, at that point also Shoaib Akhtar, like, they were difficult gaps to fill. And as Pakistan struggled with that, India, you know, on the other hand, you know, they've got people like Bhuvneshwar Kumar, Umesh Yadav, Ishan Sharma, Ashwin, even Kohli had a bowl in that game, and Jadeja. That's not a bad bowling lineup to have at your disposal at any time. While Pakistan are in consolidation mode, India in very much in a very strong position, and it kind of showed in the result of the game.
And I think the thing you've touched on there, the holes left by some of those legendary Pakistani players haven't quite been filled in the way that Pakistan would hope. Whereas India, you know, this was quite a young Indian batting lineup, you know, young certainly in terms of experience at that time. Yes, Kohli was there, but, you know, people like Shikhar Dhawan and Rohit Sharma, you know, taking over from the likes of Tendulkar and Ganguly and doing as good a job in these big tournaments and in these big matches. I mean, Shikhar Dhawan made 48 in that match. You know, it was a very low total to chase, just 102. And he was man of the tournament. He, you know, topped run scorer in that tournament as well. Had a fabulous tournament, did Shikhar Dhawan. And, you know, players like him coming in and just almost, you know, straight away replacing the likes of Sourav Ganguly, who'd been one of the greatest opening batsmen in ODI cricket history. So it just goes to show that India have managed to fill some of these gaps and add as well to their side with you know, the fast bowlers, which we've talked about as well. So I think that was the real big change, that India were able to fill some of those gaps which had been left by their legendary players. And that continued through the years, didn't it? I mean, you know, we've seen so many battles over the last decade between India and Pakistan. And yes, we have seen quite a few of these one-sided matches as well. But it's not always been the case, has it? I mean, let's turn our attention to the 2014 Asia Cup. There were a few Asia Cups held during this decade, but this one match in particular in Dhaka, fond memories for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, beating India at any time is, especially in the 2010s, was a rare enough incident that you can kind of remember all of them as a Pakistan cricket fan. And you know, I remember this vividly. It was a really exciting time for Pakistan again. It was kind of, again, it was still in a time of transition in terms of the players that were performing for them. But it was the Shahid Afridi show all of a sudden. You know, like Shahid Afridi, you know, has had such a kind of topsy-turvy career for Pakistan in terms of his ability to deliver in crucial situations. You know, okay, he did very, very well in that 2009 winning Champions Trophy campaign for Pakistan. Shahid Afridi was so successful in that 2009 World T20 campaign that Pakistan won. But in between that and sort of 2014, that you'd be hard-pressed to find any sort of major significant contributions for him, particularly on a big stage. So at the Asia Cup, he performed in the final against Bangladesh, but what other fans will remember more keenly is his performance against India and kind of winning a very thrilling contest, a very exciting game as well. And I was very fortunate to have access to one of the broadcasters in the UK that showed that match. But it was very exciting and a beautiful atmosphere in Bangladesh as well.
Yeah, and just to take you through the scorecard as well, India 245 for 8, batting first, half centuries for Rohit Sharma, Ambati Raidu, Ravindra Jadeja. You know, not a bad total on that wicket. It wasn't a particularly batsman-friendly wicket. But then Pakistan, 249 for 9, and they got to their target of 246 with just two balls to spare, one wicket in hand, of course. Shahid Afridi, 34 not out off 18 deliveries. Here's how the final over went.
Afridi makes room, goes up in the air. Has it connected? It's gone. It's six! Shahid Afridi, unbelievable shot. All right, only one ball to go because it'll be four or out. He goes again, goes big, that's up in the air. And it's six! Shahid Afridi, a beauty! What a win! Pakistan have smashed it. Shahid Afridi has done it.
Easy as you like. You know, I suppose that's a way to do it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, when you consider the players that were around at the time, you know, it's not like if you were a gambling man, your money would be on India going into that last over with just the one wicket to get. And the fact that they've been so successful of late and they've got the IPL and, you know, the quality of bowlers and the things they've been exposed to in the high pressure situations, like, you know, it's almost a no brainer. So for Shahid Afridi to kind of, you know, come to the, you know, really turn up at the occasion, That was really significant for Pakistan, that they managed to, you know, even in that period of transition, they managed to pull off some extraordinary wins. And this was the new appeal of Pakistan, the original appeal of Pakistan in the era of Waqar and prior to that, you know, Sarfaraz Nawaz and prior to that, Abdul Qadir and all these legendary figures, was the legendary figures. You watched Pakistan to watch Waqar's bowling or Wasim Akram's bowling or, you know, Syed Anwar's batting, or you watched to see these classic players. But in the modern era, you kind of watch a more kind of underdog performance from Pakistan. You kind of watch to see who's going to surprise you. You know, where's that tenacity, that willingness to survive under pressure, to overcome the stronger opponents? Like that's the modern appeal of Pakistan. And you know, that was one of the instances in the decade that really signified. It felt like a feel-good moment. It felt like a film because of it was such a dramatic finish with one wicket, last over. But you know, it was a real underdog thing because going into that match, there was absolutely no doubt about it. India was the stronger team.
Yep, it was indeed. You know, fabulous win there for Pakistan. Shahid Afridi doing what Shahid Afridi does. Pakistan fans, I'm sure, would have loved to see it a little bit more consistently, particularly with the bat. But then on to the 2015 World Cup in Australia. Now, I was at this match. I was covering this match for the BBC. Adelaide Oval, 53,000 people in. I mean, it was a sight, Atif. It was fabulous to be there. The whole build-up, the city was taken over by Indians and Pakistanis from all corners of the world, not just from South Asia, but from America, from Canada, from the UK, from Australia itself. It was just wonderful. And you know, luckily, you know, everybody got on like a house on fire. It was absolutely fine. There was no trouble that I saw or that was reported around the match. And it really was. All eyes were on this match. It was the first match at the tournament for both of these sides as well. And what a way to kick off their campaigns against each other, you know, watched by probably a billion people around the world on their TV sets. But again, you know, it was a very one-sided match. India batting first, 300 for 7. And Pakistan 224 all out, and it kind of really summed up where the power shift was.
Ryan, if that's in the air, there's a fielder coming underneath it. This might be it. And it is. Umesh Yadav picks it up. India beat Pakistan in this game.
Misbah ul Haq, 76, top scored for Pakistan in that 224 all out. And that kind of summed up his Pakistan career a little bit, because he was so consistent always, but the team wasn't. I mean, you know, occasionally they'd pull off some great wins and pull off some great results, you know, around the world as well. They did win overseas through that decade as well. But Misbah was always there. He was so consistent. His name would always be, you know, invariably top scorer, him or Yunis Khan during that decade. And there wasn't a lot else. And that kind of sums it up. Whereas for India, Shikhar Dhawan, 73, Kohli, 107, Suresh Raina coming in at the end when it looked like India were going to get a below par total. And he smashed 74 off just 56 to get them to that 300 mark. So, you know, it just goes to show that, yeah, the two guys at the top of the order set things up, built that platform, and then you've got the finishers who can come in and just blast their way and get you up to a decent total. And Pakistan just didn't seem to have that during that time.
No, I mean, it really does show kind of an all-round performance from India, like with the ball, with the bat, and all the way through that batting order, you can kind of see contributions. And as you alluded to, you know, Yunus was really the only, Misbah was the only person who really put a substantial score together. And, you know, when you're chasing 300, you need more than one person to contribute. And Ahmed Shahzad got himself 47, you know, but he struggled. He was out there for 73 deliveries. And I remember a lot of Pakistani fans were getting frustrated about his rate of scoring at the time, putting more pressure on the later batsmen. Haris Sohail got 36 as well. So, and he was, you know, very new to the team at the time. So, like, it was, you know, as a regular fixture, it was definitely a phase of Pakistani cricket where it was, the team felt a little bit uneven. Misbah as a captain did really well through that decade. You know, he achieved some extraordinary results against, you know, England overseas and at home. And, you know, you got to remember, this is the nomad era of the Pakistan team. They never really played at home, and they're always traveling. But it was really just India who kind of showed them up on the big stage. And there was always, and this is the nature of the rivalry, always there was always this additional analysis when they played against India, this renewal of, you know, okay, who do we like and who's good and who's not good and who do we change? And, you know, there's a lot more scrutiny after these big India games. And, you know, this is one of the difficult things for Pakistan throughout, and I guess India sometimes throughout the rivalry, because, you know, you'll have players who performed really well in lower profile series, and then they'll come to this fixture and they didn't really deliver. And that was the case for someone like Mohammad Irfan, for example, who bowled 10 overs for 58 without taking a wicket. Even Afridi there, he took a lot of flack because he didn't really score many runs, and his 8 overs went for 50. So, you know, it can have a lasting impact on a player's legacy, really. But the beautiful thing for them is, the sad thing for them is they don't get a chance to correct those legacies as often as people did in previous eras.
Yeah, and that is the thing, isn't it? And Atif, a lot of Pakistani fans wouldn't remember early June. I'm saying early June, just to make a point. 2017 Champions Trophy, Edgbaston, not the Oval. We'll get onto that in a minute. A lot of Pakistani fans won't remember that group game between India and Pakistan at Edgbaston, because it was business as usual as far as recent games between the two on the biggest stage had been concluded. India winning by a huge margin in the end, 124 runs on the Duckworth-Lewis method. India batted first, 319 for 3 from 48 overs, a slightly rain-affected match this one. Rohit Sharma, 91, Shikhar Dhawan, 68, Virat Kohli, 81 not out, Yuvraj Singh, 53, Hardik Pandya, 20 not out off just 6 balls at the end. I mean, that is an impressive scorecard. I'm not leaving anyone off that scorecard. Those 5 batted, and those are the scores. And then Pakistan, 164 all out, Umesh Yadav, 3 for 30, Azhar Ali, the only real contributor for Pakistan with the bat. I mean, at that stage, you couldn't have seen what was to come.
No, absolutely not. And I think at the time, there was a lot of pessimism about Pakistan's chances in that tournament in general. Like, nobody was thinking of Pakistan going into this tournament and, you know, winning it. Like, that was unthinkable. There's no way that's going to happen. You know, you've got, like, a somewhat inexperienced captain in Sarfraz, and you know, you've just lost a really influential captain. And you know, in Pakistan, transitions are something we don't do very well. You know, like in India, the one part of their huge success is the fact that they've always got several really impressive players just vying for any opening in the lineup. Whereas in Pakistan, it's something they've really struggled with to fill that gap, and never mind with a new captain. You've got to remember the kind of gulf between the teams going into that match, going into this tournament. You know, Pakistan entered the Champions Trophy as the lowest ranked team out of the top eight at the time, yep. Right? So they were the lowest ranked team, and India were on the flip side of that. I don't think they were number one, but they were sort of two, and so close. And it was unthinkable that this Pakistan team, and when you look back at it, and you look at the scorecard and you look at the team, the players that played, you think, okay, oh, fair enough, that team won a tournament, that makes sense. Yeah, there's a bunch of great players. At the time, you didn't think it was, you know, you didn't think they could do it. When you looked at, you know, Babar Azam wasn't the Babar Azam that we know now. Fakhar Zaman was a completely unproven quantity. Azhar Ali was like a test match specialist. You're expecting him to perform in one-day internationals. And Shoaib Malik had, again, sort of, you know, he was kind of borderline Afridi-esque in his performance in terms of his lack of consistency. And
in terms,
you know,
of his never-ending sort of association with the Pakistan team, his evergreen age of 21, or certainly looks that way. He's still quite a fit guy. Yeah. How old is Shoaib Malik now?
I think Shoaib Malik is 38 at time of recording, but I could be wrong. I'm never really sure about these things, but yeah, I mean, yes. You know, he's got some of that serum that keeps you looking super young, because if you ever
been
meet
around
the guy,
forever, hasn't he?
Yeah, if you ever
been
meet the guy,
forever.
He's got sort of flawless skin and great hair, and you know, just looks after himself. You just think, you know, what is this elixir, and how do I get access to it? But you know, I mean, yeah. So yeah, like Shoaib Malik, Mohammad Hafeez, Imad Wasim. So on reflection, you might look at it now, and it's very easy with hindsight to think, yeah, of course that team did well. But at the time, expectations were they certainly would not. You had sort of, you know, Mohammad Amir, you know, kind of making his, he was still kind of, you know, fans were still sort of a bit awkward about Mohammad Amir, you know, in terms of expectation, and he kind of set everything up for them in that final. After that first game, there were even less hopes, but the way they came back in that tournament, it's mind-blowing. And I think for a whole generation of Pakistani cricket fans, it might be their kind of big moment.
It is. It certainly is. I mean, I speak to you know, a few Pakistanis on a regular basis, and all they seem to talk about is the 2017 Champions Trophy. I mean, previously it was the 1992 World Cup. That was getting a bit old. That was lost on a whole generation of newer, younger British Pakistani fans, certainly the ones that I come across, because it was such a long time ago. Some of them weren't even born, or even if they were born, they just can't remember it. They were too young. But this 2017 Champions Trophy, and then to beat India in that final, I mean, that just tops it all off. I mean, June the 18th, 2017, I'm sure Atif Nawaz one day may decide to get a tattoo with that particular date someplace on his body, just to commemorate that moment. I mean, what a day that was. The sun was shining, beautiful weather, the scene was set at the Oval, full house, packed house, and Pakistan lost the toss, so things couldn't have started off in a worse fashion. And did you feel you were handed a bit of a head start by Virat Kohli, who chose to bowl first?
Yeah, no, it was quite surprising, because coming into that game, Pakistan, they had this resurgence through that tournament, and you know, it was really kind of batting first that had put them in better position. So all of a sudden, it was like, well, that's not so bad. Like when the toss went and India decided to field, you think, okay. Okay, that's not, yeah, that's all right. That's not a bad toss to lose. I think, if I'm not wrong, something very similar happened the last time Pakistan won a major tournament on English soil, which was in 2009, the World T20, which is the other big moment that Pakistani cricket fans talk about, obviously, in between the 92 World Cup and 2017. But for some reason, it's quite obvious what the reason is, that one's talked about a lot less than the Champions Trophy. One, the Champions Trophy was more recent. And two, it was against India in a final. So I imagine 10 years earlier, when India beat Pakistan in the 2007 World T20 final, that was a huge moment for India at the time, specifically because it was Pakistan.
Do you know what, though, Atif? It's funny, because I was at that 2009 World T20 final. I was doing commentary for the BBC, and you know, it was a fabulous win for Pakistan, one of the best moments in their cricketing history. But that and the 2007 World T20, which India won, against Pakistan as well in the final, they're not quite talked about in the same way as these 50-over contests for some reason. I just don't know why. I don't know if it's because it's T20 cricket and there's a bit of snobbishness from a certain generation of cricket fans about the shortest form of the game. But certainly this 2017 Champions Trophy was celebrated in a much bigger way. Obviously, yes, it was against India, but just even in terms of being the champions, it just seems to mean more to win that, even though it's not a world tournament, it's not seen as a World Cup like the World T20 is, and obviously the 50-over World Cup is as well. But still, you know, this was celebrated in a much bigger fashion, and it seems to carry more pride. Even when India won it in 2013, it seemed to carry more pride with Indians winning that than winning the World T20 for some reason. I don't know. Maybe that's just the people that I've come across or the things that I've seen on social media. But it just seems to be more fondly remembered, this 2017 Champions Trophy, than the 2009 World Cup. Despite, I know, you know, we keep hopping back to, yes, it was India in the final. But, you know, do you think that's just to do with the snobbishness of the shortest form of the game?
I'm sure there's an element of that. But I also think, you know, a huge part of it is that underdog performance from Pakistan. You couldn't have written it better if you were writing a script. You know, they lose the first game against their fiercest rivals, you know, and they lose it in such a sort of one-sided manner. And then they, you know, through the course of the tournament, they make a huge comeback, and now they face them again. And, you know, it's like watching a Rocky film, you know. And, you know, it really did feel like a storybook kind of. It had so many of these little fairy tale-esque elements, that final game, like where, you know, Fakhar Zaman, I think it was out of a no ball early on. Like, so Jasprit Bumrah had him, but it was a no ball. And
game changer, that one. Well, yeah. Absolute game changer, because Fakhar went on to play one of the best innings we saw in the tournament.
Absolutely. And, you know, it changed his life, really, because he played this incredible innings on this huge platform. And, you know, despite being slightly inconsistent ever since, he's always been given, you know, a preferential hand because of the magnitude of the performance. He's always had his name kind of in the hat and around selection. Obviously, things like endorsements and becoming a household name in Pakistan, all these things happened because of his performance in that game. And, you know, putting 338 on the board was a phenomenal effort from Pakistan at the time. But such is such was the regard of the Indian team that even at 338, it was considered that India they would probably do this. Like, they'll probably still chase this. 338 is a great effort.
Did you really think that?
I think a lot of
people... Did you really think that? Nobody in the media centre where I was thought that that was going to be the case, especially Indian journalists. I mean, they were the most pessimistic. But even all of us from the British press and British media were just thinking, no, that is too much. It's a final. That was the difference. We'd seen scores of 300-odd chased down quite regularly in that tournament, especially at the Oval, which was a fabulous batting wicket. But it was a final, and anything in the region of 300 was going to be difficult. But 338, just that little bit extra, in a final against your biggest rivals, it was always going to be a tough ask. And I suppose if India were to succeed, one man was going to have to get loads of runs, and that man that everybody always looks to in run chases, especially over 300 runs in India, is Virat Kohli. And he's got a fabulous record of taking India home with centuries in the second innings, chasing these big totals. But he was one of Mohammad Amir's three victims. And Amir, in fact, snuffed out the top three: Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, who was dropped the ball before he was eventually caught, and then Shikhar Dhawan as well. So, I mean, you know, just talk us through your emotions when first Virat Kohli was dropped. What were you thinking? Is that the Champions Trophy gone?
Well, you know, it was...
In your head.
It was devastating. Now, I remember that day vividly. You know, it fell during Ramadan. And, you know, I did have access to some tickets, but I opted not to go to the match and just watch it at home with my family. And, you know, I felt like that was the way to enjoy that game. And I remember watching it all the way through, and I was very, you know, I was kind of into it, but I was still being quite cautious in terms of any real optimism, because, you know, as we've been saying all the way through this podcast, you know, India has the IPL, and the IPL teaches you how to finish. The IPL teaches you how to be cool under pressure, how to perform at the highest level with the biggest audiences, with the most amount of pressure. So because of that, surely this Indian team will break the hearts of the Pakistanis here. This is the mentality that, you know, I think a lot of, you know, journalists, even those who are feeling very optimistic, and it did feel like, you know, the right end to a fairy tale from a Pakistani perspective, but even so, you know, the last big boss to beat was the hardest. And, you know, when Mohammad Amir, who was bowling beautifully and just, you know, he found an incredible rhythm in that tournament. You know, when he had Virat Kohli dropped, it really did seem like, well, this is it. This is where things go, you know, south. And, you know, this was it. We peaked and it's all downhill from here. And this is where India kind of put the huge partnership on. And this is where Virat Kohli breaks some kind of record and all that kind of stuff. And then it was absolutely extraordinary to see Mohammad Amir, you know, replicate that, you know, that kind of aggression and just bring in another beautiful delivery to Virat Kohli. And again, it's one that everybody sort of remembers that dismissed him. And, you know, this is the best batsman in the world. And to be able to put him in a position where you dismiss him two deliveries in a row really spoke of, A, the class and, you know, the potential fulfillment of someone like Mohammad Amir, but also just how fired up and how much they wanted it. They really, really, really wanted it, that Pakistan team. And, you know, that kind of put them well on their way after that Virat Kohli wicket happened. And, of course, there were screams of joy and delight in my household and things like that. And, you know, it was incredible. And, you know, as a contest, it started to become slightly one-sided after that, because Pakistan, you know, they ended up winning by 180 runs, which is the biggest ever win in the final of a major ICC tournament to this day. And, you know, nobody saw that coming. Like, you know, I think people, you might have found people who would have predicted a Pakistan win at that halfway point. You might even have found people who will say, you know, Pakistan are favourites at this point, but nobody saw a 180 run win over India coming. And, you know, I vividly remember the images on social media of a lot of Indian fans leaving the stadium early, and, you know, the celebrations of the Pakistani fans, the white blazers that they had to inexplicably wear as champions, yeah. You know, which kind of went nicely with the green kit. And obviously Pakistan's flag is green and white, so it actually kind of worked. You know, I can't really think of many scenarios in which white blazers are the way to go. But yeah, and it was incredible. And, you know, it was a feel good moment. I suspect even a lot of Indian fans kind of felt good about Pakistan's win there, because it really did have that feel-good moment. And, you know, you don't often get those in cricket.
That's gone up India. Safras takes the catch. It's all over. Pakistan win. 158 India blown away in the final, and it's Pakistan who are through. Over the line, massive win. Great scenes. And after a very long break, they were able to beat India in an all-important contest. They richly deserved this.
India 156 all out. Eventually, those three wickets for Mohammad Amir, like I mentioned. Hassan Ali, 3 for 19 as well. Man of the tournament. Fabulous tournament that he had. Hardik Pandya did his best in that innings. And, you know, the most optimistic of India fans would have felt there was still hope while Hardik was there. 76 of 43. Six sixes in that innings as well. He certainly had the run rate in check for a bit, but India just lost too many wickets too early, and it was too much to do over too many overs. And eventually, 180 runs, the winning margin for Pakistan, and taking that trophy back home. And I tell you what, one of the touching moments was, you mentioned the India fans leaving the stadium early. Yes, there were plenty of them doing that. A few of them stuck around for Hardik Pandya's innings, and then as soon as he was out, the mass exodus started just before the end of the match. I think one of the nicest things that I saw was a lot of Indian fans were giving their tickets to Pakistani fans who had turned up at the Oval, didn't have tickets themselves, just wanted to be in and around the stadium while they're watching the match on their smartphones, or, you know, peering through and trying to catch one of the big TV screens behind one of the stands or something like that, just to be a part of the atmosphere. And a lot of these India fans I saw giving tickets to Pakistani fans so they could come in and watch their side finish things off and then go and lift the trophy as well. So when Sarfraz Ahmed did actually lift the trophy, and I was lucky enough to to be pitch side for that one. And, you know, firstly, the atmosphere between the sides was good. We also saw those images of Virat Kohli and a couple of the Indian guys joking around with Sarfraz and the Pakistani team. So it was good to see that despite the defeat in the final, you know, the atmosphere between the teams was good. It was respectful. And then when Pakistan lifted that trophy, there were a lot more Pakistan fans in the stadium then than there were at the start of the day. So that just goes to show how many of the Indian fans would have handed over their tickets right at the end when they were leaving, just to allow the Pakistani fans that moment. I thought that was one of the more touching things of that tournament, and respect to anyone who did that.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is this, as we've discussed over the course of this podcast, there's been a tradition of, you know, wonderful kind of fraternal brotherly behavior between Indian and Pakistani fans and players. And there's this huge tradition of friendship there. And, you know, despite, you know, what seems to be the common narrative sometimes, you know, there is a lot of friendship there. There is a lot of goodwill there. And, you know, that was a lovely gesture. And, you know, there's often these gestures happen between fans and at major India versus Pakistan games, including one that involved myself, which I'm sure we'll get to shortly. But, you know, just to put a kind of bow on it, it really was like, you know, for any fan that was, I mean, I remember I was 8 years old when Pakistan won the World Cup in 1992. And I had a, you know, that kind of, that really brought me into the game. Like, that was the kind of moment I realized that this was a game that I was going to love for the rest of my life. And, you know, there would have been a whole new generation of Pakistani fans, particularly because it was in England and, you know, it's also shiny and wonderful in England when you broadcast it. You know, it would have brought a whole generation of lapsed fans back to the game, and a lot of young people would all of a sudden pick up the game again. Pakistan was a country that, you know, up until that time, they didn't play cricket at home. You know, they didn't have the access to the big leagues like the IPL. They didn't have the big teams like India touring them or have the chance to tour them. So, you know, they were really struggling at that point in time. And for them to deliver a Champions Trophy win, despite all of the obstacles they faced, it was so significant. And perhaps that is why it is remembered so fondly by Pakistan fans, even more so than the 2009 World T20 triumph.
Yeah, and one of the memories that I've got in particular following Pakistan lifting that trophy on June the 18th, 2017, was interviewing Sarfraz Ahmed just after he'd done that, the trophy lift. And, you know, that was a fabulous moment for me personally to interview the winning captain of an ICC tournament on the pitch. Really lucky to be able to do that and lucky to do the job that I do. But I couldn't understand a word he was saying. He speaks so fast and he was so excited that day. I was lucky the interview wasn't in Urdu because his English is fast. His Urdu is even faster, I'm sure. And I just wouldn't have understood anything he said. I got the odd word of his interview and had to listen back to it afterwards to make some sense of it. But it was really good to see him that excited. But yeah, it's just a shame. I couldn't quite understand a lot of what he was saying just because he speaks so quickly.
You've got access to some of that fancy studio software. You could just slow it down a little bit. Yes. But you do. You always end up at these incredible occasions. And, you know, you at that, you know, at the 2019 World Cup, you along, and I got a chance to join you this time, was one of the first time, you were one of the first people on the pitch as England lifted the World Cup. And, you know, you got a chance to meet and speak to so many of the players and interview them and immediately broadcast that. Like, it really is a privilege. And I was right there with you. I got to meet all these players and, you know, moment, you know, to get to share what is possibly the greatest moment of, or certainly the greatest professional moment of someone's life, is quite extraordinary. And you get to see a side of them that is so honest. Because, I mean, when you met Sarfraz there, he would have, you know, this was easy. Aside from maybe the birth of his first child, this was probably the best moment of his life. And
yeah,
he, you know, you got to kind of really see him in you know, happiness and bliss in its rawest form. This is why we love sports. And, you know, all we really want as fans is proximity to that. And you were right there, my friend. You've really seen it.
Yeah. And, you know, like you say, 2019 World Cup, you were there alongside me, broadcasting from the stadium, live on the BBC. And, you know, you were hosting in the stadium as well, I believe, on the big screen. You know, fabulous day that was for both of us. But as far as the cricket goes, unfortunately for you, it was another big win for India, 89 runs on the Duckworth-Lewis method. But I don't think that tells the full story of how comprehensive this win was for India. They batted first, they got 336 for 5. Rohit Sharma, 140 off 113. That was one of his five centuries, five hundreds at that single World Cup. KL Rahul, 57. Virat Kohli, 77. Mohammad Amir bowled well again, 3 for 47 for him. But the rest of the bowlers took a bit of a tonking apart from Imad Wasim.
Yeah, it was it was a great World Cup for Rohit Sharma in general. I mean, so unbelievably consistent. And, you know, I mean, sadly for him, just because India didn't feature in the final, they won't be remembered in quite the same way. But, you know, they certainly will remember this game. And I remember the build-up to this game was something incredible. Like, I mean, every single India versus Pakistan match that we've talked about, not just in this podcast, but throughout this series, you know, I suspect none of them had this kind of build up. There were so many different reporters and so many different countries and so many different, you know, people kept talking about that number, you know, the billion people around the world, people around the world. And, you know, and it didn't feel like hyperbole. It often does, you know, people hype up sporting events and, you know, outside of sort of football, there's boxing and people always talk about, you know, the biggest event in the history of this truly was the biggest, most watched event in sporting history up until, and the build up justified that. You had newspapers and outlets that never talked about these things. All of a sudden, that's all they want to talk about. They want insight into India and Pakistan. They want, you know, background about why this rivalry is so huge. And coming into this game, it was huge. And so many sponsors and media outlets, and even in the stadium, you know, so many, you know, people taking clients, and, you know, it was about so much more than the game. That the build up to it was something that is so difficult to put into words. And to be a part of that, it was, I mean, as you said, I got to kind of host live in the stadium and be on the big screen. And, you know, it was truly one of the professional experiences of my life, just being in that environment. Everything was so memorable about the day, and I'll never forget it, despite the fact that the game itself was quite one-sided. And, you know, the tone for it was very much set by the way it started in that first partnership.
What fabulous characters the Pakistanis take around to these cricket grounds, especially in England, with them. The Stani Army, I believe a lot of them call themselves. And you've got, what, the general of Pakistan, you've got the Sheikh of Pakistan who dresses up like an Arab sheikh, and he actually turned up on a white horse to the match, didn't he? That was one of the scenes before the match that made it around the world, around media outlets around the world. He turned up to the match riding on a white horse. I mean, that is great, isn't it?
It really is. I got a chance to know some of the Pakistani super fans before, during all these matches in the World Cup. And, you know, they would turn up to all of them at great personal expense. They don't have any kind of private sponsors or anything like that. They all just adore Pakistani cricket. And, you know, it kind of just adds to the spectacle of the occasion. Like, it really feels like you're not just going to watch. If I think about sort of the old school sensibility of going to watch a game of cricket, you know, it's like a day out, and, you know, there's a bit of decorum. I kind of picture a blazer and a tie, and maybe I'm at Lord's, so maybe there's a nice hat and, you know, some kind of beverage. Like, that's kind of how you picture it. But the modern game, it felt so much more like a carnival than like a game of cricket. It was, you know, there's so many of these incredible characters, people dressed up, kids wanting to take photos with these people, and, you know, all the noise and the crowd chanting. It wasn't unlike a WWF wrestling event or a WWE wrestling event, you know, because of all the booing and the cheering and the applauding everything and fans taking every moment. I mean, you mentioned that it seemed like Pakistan might sort of get back into the game. It was always going to be difficult. They only really had one significant partnership, which was sort of Fakhar Zaman and Babar Azam. And, you know, Fakhar got 62 and Babar got 48. And, you know, after that, nobody
really
came. Was
that partnership, was it about sort of 80, 90-odd they put on together?
Something they did. They actually put on 103 together.
Okay. That was the time. That's the time I'm talking about, when there were a lot of nervous Indians in the ground.
Yeah, after that, you wouldn't see any further sort of partnerships. Yeah, Imad Wasim did get some runs out the bottom, but by then the result was a foregone conclusion. And, you know, sort of it was affected by rain as well, which also felt really redundant, because as the game continued to get shortened, like, the equation became even more implausible. So, you know, from like a Pakistani perspective, it was very much like extending the misery, but the Indians were ecstatic all the way through. It was a packed Old Trafford. They bought in the temporary stand for the game as well, and it's quite extraordinary. And if you ever get a chance to if they ever put that up there again, I suppose, like, you know, if you get a chance to go right to the very top, it's worth kind of testing your vertigo, because particularly when there's nobody on it and it's before the game and you just want to try it and you convince the stewards to let you do it, just to climb up to the top, it's extraordinary how steep it is. But they had so many, you know, the whole stadium was packed, and, you know, celebrities everywhere. I bumping into colleagues from television and radio and all sorts of things. And, you know,
forget the colleagues. Let's talk about the real celebrity. And I'm not talking about Chacha Cricket, who has got more sponsors than the ICC, but I'm talking about another celebrity that we both were lucky enough to bump into and have a little chat to after the game. Bollywood superstar Ranveer Singh, who was actually in the UK filming his biopic of Kapil Dev, where he plays the lead role.
Yeah, he was in town and he was filming 83. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to hang around the press box very much that day because, you know, of my sort of on-field duties. So, you know, normally I'd come and hang out with you and various other people in the press box, get a nice view, you know, grab some of the complimentary drinks and enjoy the game.
Lovely food at Old Trafford it was that day.
Yeah, it was lovely food kind of throughout the World Cup, I thought. But I mean, it was a wonderful, privileged position that we were all in, and I really wanted to just kind of enjoy that. But of course, I was working on the pitch, and I had a great time, and there were a lot of celebrities kind of floating around, and I got a chance to meet a lot of them. And I remember there was a point in the day where I thought interviewing Chacha Cricket on the big screen might be the highlight of my day. And it certainly wasn't, because...
Big moment,
you know,
though.
It was pretty cool. It was a very cool moment. And, you know, it was nice to kind of connect with him. And I'm still in touch with him to this day. So that's nice. But I knew that Ranveer Singh was there. And I am a fan of Ranveer Singh, the Bollywood actor. So I've seen several of his films and he's kind of milling around. And a couple of our broadcast colleagues had posted selfies and things with him and things like that. And, you know, and I was like, you know, I remember sort of saying to, it might have been to yourself, it would have been nice to meet him if it was possible, but, you know, it's no big deal. After the game, I was kind of crestfallen. You know, it was so one-sided. And the thing is, when you're presenting at the live game, you have to be really upbeat and really excitable and really kind of like, you know, hey guys, you know, so this is the score, and don't forget you can buy your discounted ICC merchandise at this store. And you know, so you have to kind of keep your face on. So I was kind of like that, and I was exhausted because I'd been there all day, and, you know, I'd been running around, and the energy levels were so high, and it was such an emotionally draining game that by the time it came for us to have a chance to meet Ranveer Singh, and I remember you got your photo, and I was with him, and I had my phone, and I hit record, you know, and, you know, he looked at me, and he kind of sensed that this guy was... something's going on with this guy. And I go, like, I'm kind of sad, man. I'm a Pakistan fan. I think he just kind of assumed that I was an India fan as well. But I told him, well, look, I'm a Pakistan fan. And, you know, I'm devastated. My team lost.
I'm a Pakistan fan. I'm very sad. Somebody tell Jimmy up.
Put it there, man. Put it there.
Thank you, Ranveer.
It's always next time.
Next time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't be disheartened. Played well. Boys are committed, dedicated, professionals, and they'll be back.
He kind of, you know, very kindly... you know, consoled me and gave me a hug and, you know, gave me some words of encouragement, you know, some of which admittedly didn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, he did try, and it was really sweet and I really liked it. And then he gave me a hug and, you know, I thought it was really, really nice. And I remember posting the video of it with the caption, "Indian fans are really nice." And, you know, it was really... to celebrate, and in my mind it was to celebrate the friendship of the occasion. Like, all day there were no incidents, you know, you gotta remember tensions were quite high, there were a few international level conflicts between the countries at the time, so it was really nice to see, you know, cricket watched and played in the spirit that it was meant to be. And, you know, and this kind of this little gesture from this Bollywood star, it meant a lot to me. So I just kind of posted it. I didn't really think, you know, I didn't anticipate it would get picked up in the way that it did. Not at all. I was driving with another mutual friend of ours, Ankur Desai, and, you know, we're driving back from Manchester to London, and, you know, he's like, "Your phone's binging a lot." I'm like, "Oh, sorry about that." And I just turned it on silent. I didn't even look at it. And I went home to London. I dropped off Ankur en route, and I got home, and then, you know, I just went to sleep, and I woke up to discover, you know, millions of people had watched that clip off my my Instagram and off my social media, and it you know, people had picked up on it, and some people did like credit me as like, you know, cricket journalist or, you know, stand-up comedian or actor or whatever, and other people just kind of said sad Pakistan fan. You know? I mean, they're both true,
factually,
so it's fine.
Correct. Yeah,
yeah, they're both factually correct, I suppose. But I mean it was really bizarre, really, because, you know, here I've had this crushing defeat, you know, and there I got to meet have a very cool moment with a big Bollywood star, and, you know, in 10 years time, I might not remember the fact that Pakistan lost, but I'll certainly remember meeting a very cool actor who tried to make me feel better about the whole thing. So that was cool.
Yeah, wonderful. I mean, that was one of the highlights of the World Cup that whole day.
You know, ultimately, it would be nice to see, you know, this kind of occasion again. That's all you can think about, because, you know, this is just over a year ago now that we're reflecting on this occasion. And there was a time where you'd have, you know, maybe 10 matches between the two teams in that same period of time. So it would be, it really is the dream for me to watch India versus Pakistan in another bilateral series. You know, my dream scenario is traveling to India to watch a Pakistan team play in India in different cities, and I'd love for that to happen at some stage, and obviously for Pakistan to reciprocate and, you know, do that as well, do the homecoming thing. And certainly it's difficult to see that happening anytime soon. Maybe it will. In any case, that takes us nicely to the present day, and what an amazing rivalry it's been over the decades. We have to give so much thanks to all the players who have ever taken part in these classic series, these matches, these moments over time, and a huge thanks to all of our guests on the series so far. But there's still plenty more to come. So far, we've talked about the men's game, but the women's game has taken off big time in both India and Pakistan, and next week we'll be focused on the women's teams.
Yes, and we're delighted that we'll be joined by a couple of players, one from each side, and I think we'll leave the names as a surprise for now, but do keep an eye out on our social media pages, where you can also get in touch with us at Nikesh Raghani and at Atif Nawaz. You can also follow the Wisden Cricket and Wisden India social feeds. The usual Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast drops again soon, and we'll be back with you next week.